Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Bake with Legend offer fans of the Great British Bake Off the chance to bake alongside their favourite stars from the show. If you're planning a special birthday, a hen party, or perhaps in charge of your next work social, why not get in touch with us to discuss arranging an event for you? We also offer Bake with Legend at Home, where one of our Bake Off alumni can come and lead a baking class in your own accommodation. Just imagine that, Howard or Jane coming round and teaching you afternoon tea. For more information, visit bakewithalegend.com or email info@bakewithalegend.com.
All of these cake competitions that tend to be the Great British Food Festival ones, so that Grimsthorpe was one of those, spiral ices are the prize, so you are sort of it is a highly appropriate baking tool, not.
Hello and welcome to the Bake Down podcast with me, Josh Landy, founder of Bake with a Legend. Once again, I'm delighted to be joined by former Bake Off contestants Jane Beadle and Howard Middleton. Howard, we are at the halfway stage. We've been and had five episodes. Can you believe it?
I know, it's amazing, isn't it? Well, I mean, I suppose we sort of knew there would be 10. So,
yes.
It's going to be halfway, isn't it? Yeah, but it is still pretty amazing.
And only five to go. That seems a sad bit almost, Jane. We're onto the second half after this one.
The sad thing is, yeah, I really miss it once it's gone. I love Bake Off. Just that music sets me a tingle. It also means once this is finished, then it's sort of all downhill to Christmas, which is also a bit depressing too, I think, at this stage of the game.
There might be a Christmas Bake Off.
Oh, there will be, Christmas Day. I was on that last year.
Yeah, and Howard, you did it a few years before.
Did you Christmas, didn't you?
Yeah.
Nobody watches Christmas. They've all eaten. Well, they don't. They all sit. They eat their Christmas dinner, don't they? They eat their Christmas dinner. They have a few too many sherries. And then they'll hit the turkey sandwiches and fall asleep. I mean, I don't think many people
Jane,
watch this.
I remember that you won the Christmas Bake Off, and I'm sure thousands and probably millions of other people do. I'm sure of it.
I don't think millions, but I do have a cake plate to prove it.
Well, of course, you get the honour of the plate, isn't it?
You
Christmas winner and you get a plate.
We do, and a very beautiful Emma Bridgewater one as well.
Where does it sit in your house?
It sits, I'd like to say it sat in the toilet so that everybody could see it whenever they visited. No, it sits up on a high shelf, so I don't like to show off too much.
Fantastic. Thank you to everyone who has continued to be listening and supporting the podcast. Please do continue to tell all of your friends. There's been some lovely reviews. I'll read one of them out. It's from someone whose username was FGH. I'm not sure what it stands for. No idea how I stumbled across this podcast, but I'm so glad I did. I've just binge listened to the first three episodes and I'm loving it. I love the insider knowledge and the little behind the scenes bits from Howard and Jane, all held together by Josh. And I'll see you at one of your classes soon. So thank you very much to FGH. And we should say congratulations. Congratulations to Nikki and Louise. They were our Bake Down competition winners a couple of weeks ago. They went to Ian Cummings' class and made some incredibly impressive tarts, which they put up on Instagram. So well done to you guys. There'll be another competition I'll tell you about later in the podcast. But to start with, Howard and Joan, had a few questions in from some of our listeners, and this one comes from Katie, and she says, "Hi, I'd like to ask Jane and Howard how far in advance they have to submit their recipes. Jane said on a previous podcast that they received the challenges briefing about 5 weeks in advance. So how many weeks prior to the actual challenge do they have to get their recipes submitted? The judges always talk about the contestants changing their strategy for the next week or even the next day, and I wonder how practical that actually is, loving the show." So, Jane, are you going to try and answer that one?
Well, yes, it all gets very complicated, doesn't it? The whole thing is because the home economists and all the behind-the-scenes people have to have all our recipes well in advance to make sure that we have all the ingredients and hit the brief, really. So 5 weeks before the show, whether it happens now, but certainly for my year, 5 weeks before the show, we got recipe requests for the first two episodes and you get a week to do those. And then the second week, you do episodes 3 and 4, third weeks, 5 and 6, and so on. The thing is, you don't have much time to tweak it. I know it says they say you should improve your flavours and you've got to work on this and you've got to work on that. But you can't change those recipes too much because the poor old home economists would then have to change everything that they've got. So if, as happens, people use essences, and Paul really doesn't like essences because they taste quite fake, you know, if you've been told that 1 week, perhaps you might oomph up your orange or put more coconut in or whatever that is rather than the essence. But you can only really tweak them from week to week. So, yeah, it is very difficult.
Okay, so there's not going to be too bigger changes, Howard. But is this just a simple? Are you emailing them in? Is that how it is? They say, send us your week one, send us your week two.
Yeah, and certainly for us, we had to have up until week 9, we had to have all 9 weeks' worth of recipes submitted before we even started filming week one. So, again, any tweaks that you're making have got to be kind of small tweaks. I think there were certain people within our year, I don't know about your year, who sort of took tweaks to the very limit, I'm going to come up with something completely different and, you know, suffered the wrath of the home economist and the food producer as a result of that. But
you could do it. You could make those changes and they let them get away with it.
They did let them get away with it. I'm not sure whether...
Was that different for you,
was
Jane?
Was it then? Different for you?
Well, we did have a few changes in the first 2 or 3 weeks, and then a certain person who shall remain nameless completely changed his churros recipe to the point where it was completely unrecognisable and it came as a complete surprise to everybody on set. And after that, they were so strict with us, we couldn't even change our tins. If we decided we wanted to go from a 6-inch to an 8-inch, they wouldn't let us do that. And we have one person to thank for that. Selassie will remain nameless. Right. Oh, dear, did I say that, Selassie? Sorry. But that was... It was fine. I think that's fine if you know what the rules are and they're strict with it. The rules apply to everybody. Yeah,
absolutely.
It's difficult as well because obviously... Once you start chatting with the other bakers, you do feel sort of conscious if you find that, for instance, you are doing something which has got a Black Forest gâteau theme and somebody else is doing Black Forest and somebody else. And so you think, oh, should I change mine? You know, should I do something different? And I think that in itself kind of compels people to perhaps do a little bit more than tweaking. But we've seen already that within the tent this year, people are doing sort of similar things, aren't they? So
yes, a lot of them are thinking along the same lines, aren't they? We've had several very, very similar bakes, and they will not have been able to confer because you submit all your recipes before you have the first clue who the other contestants are. It's just pure luck.
Yeah.
Okay. Katie, I hope that answers your question. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Question here, Howard, from Chris Jones. My question is, who in your year was the biggest potty mouth off camera? Also, what was the
Howard
recipe?
Was.
Well, yeah. Also, what was the recipe of yours or one of the other bakers from your year that caused the biggest headache for the crew to get ingredients for? So, Howard, who was the biggest potty mouth? And what do you think there about perhaps the biggest headache of a recipe? Do you remember anything?
I don't remember anybody really being a potty mouth. I can't remember anybody So I think Mel and Sue were a bit, well, certainly Sue was a bit rude sometimes, but I can't remember any of the bakers. I can remember a couple of people, but I'm not going to name them. I think Ruby went on to sort of be quite aggressively sweary and justifiably so, I think, on social media. But I don't remember her swearing a lot within the tent.
Jane, the second half of this question was there a recipe of yours or one of the other bakers that caused the biggest headache for the crew to get ingredients for? Maybe something really niche piece of ingredients that couldn't be found by the staff, the production staff?
Certainly nothing for me. At one point I asked for a certain type of chocolate because I thought that you had to be a bit fancy on Bake Off. And the home economist went, I just can't get that one. I'm not going to order it on Amazon. Will you settle for Bourneville or something? And which was fine, yes. Basically, it was slapping me down, telling me not to get above myself. So I didn't have any problems at all. They did go out of their way to try and get whatever you wanted, obviously, apart from my chocolate. But Tom, I'm pretty sure it was Tom, wanted, I think it was a type of beer that was only in Scotland, and he had a bottle at home that he'd used, but they really couldn't get hold of it. So I think if there is something that you really, really want to use that's very obscure, my advice to anybody that might do it in the future is to, if you've got hold of it and you've used it in your bakes, take it with you to the tent, because that way you can make sure that you've got exactly what you know.
Yeah, because you can imagine, can't you, that, you know, one chocolate might taste and react slightly differently to another chocolate. So understand why, if you're so used to doing the practicing with one type of brand of chocolate or whatever it might be, you want to take that through with you.
I was just being a bit posy, I think.
Well, thank you, Chris, again for your questions and for listening and supporting the podcast. Now, we've been asking you to always be sending in your self-raising selfies. I want to hear about where you have met or bumped into someone from the Great British Bake Off. And Emma Ward has been in touch. She says, I recently met Howard Middleton and tried to give him a sweet tooth instead of a savoury one with my chocolate pigs in mud cake at Grimsthorpe Castle. He didn't have a sweet tooth by the end of it, but he did give me a spiralizer. So firstly, Howard, I've got a few questions here. Do you remember Emma and the chocolate pigs in mud cake at Grimsthorpe Castle? And I'd like to know about the most interesting or unique or ridiculous prize you've ever had to award someone after giving this spiralizer.
I think it's all of these cake competitions that tend to be the Great British Food Festival ones. So that Grimsthorpe was one of those. Spiralizers are the prize. So you are sort of it's a highly appropriate baking tool, not, but
well, I think it's, I always say there's balance when people criticize us for encouraging people to eat too much sugar.
Yeah,
I think on the one hand you've asked them to make a cake with chocolate, with pigs in chocolate mud, and on the other hand you're giving them a spiralizer so they can go and eat veg, and I think it is just showing how balanced we are.
Yes, we are very balanced. I can't remember whether I've given anything very odd. Do you know, the sad thing is, I think, when people do come at kind of second or third or whatever, and they don't get anything, I think that's a bit sad. I've given some where you give people a little wooden spoon or something like that. And I think it's better than nothing, really, isn't it?
It's something.
Yeah.
It's not like a mini spiralizer for coming second.
No.
Is there a particular brand of spiralizer that have dominated this prize giving area?
Yes, because I think they're sponsored by Kenwood. Okay. So.
I was gonna say they're all Kenwood, aren't they? Yeah.
This presumably was you selecting the winner. Did you pick this as the winner at Grimsthorpe Castle?
Yes, I probably wasn't on my own. I think probably Sandy Doherty would have been with me at Grimsthorpe.
Oh, yes.
It was as much her choice as mine.
Okay.
Oh, and the audience.
Oh, and because, the audience, because yeah, they have a public panel as well.
Do they get to taste?
Yes.
Or they just have to? Oh, they can come up and taste a bit. All right. Well, hopefully many of our listeners will see both of you around the country and who knows, with a bit of luck, maybe win a spiralizer from Kenwood in due course. Well, let's get into the week that was in the tent. It was, of course, the 1920s week. This was another week where We went for, I guess, a new theme in the Bake Off tent. We, for many years, have had recurring themes, but having had the first ever Dairy Week, we had the first ever 1920s week. Jane, what did you make just in terms of the theme before we get into the specifics?
Well, I quite like a themed week. 1920s seemed to be a good opportunity for people to really go to town with their decorations. And they did that. I'm not convinced they all did it in a 1920s way, but I thought it was great. It was interesting to know that custard pies were particularly popular then. And it was interesting to know that pineapple, tinned fruit was incredibly popular then, because contrary to my children's belief, I was not around in the 1920s. I didn't mind 1920s at all. I think it does push you to think of things that are relevant. I thought it was a nice week. I thought it was attractive. They had some lovely bakes and proper bakes this week. I moaned about dairy not being a proper baking week, and I liked the 1920s week.
Howard, last year, week five had been spice, which again was a first time of a new theme being introduced. But 1920s for you, it was a step up from last week's Dairy Week?
Yeah, I would have liked 1920s. I think, as Jane said, there's a lot of opportunity for decorative kind of elements to your bake. Jane and I were saying on the way over, it's not an era that immediately you think of as a baking highlight. So it's not like Victorian or Tudor or whatever, where you think this is I know what the food is going to be like from that particular era. So I think it was definitely going to always go more towards the kind of decorative elements. And as Jane said, I think they did a pretty good job, all in all.
I agree.
Well, look, let's get into the signature. There were a few interesting comments that were made just at the start of this week's show, where Michelle said, "I am living and dreaming everything Bake Off." But, you know, when she was sort of asked about what it was like to come back in week five, I just imagine it's sort of totally all-consuming. And David sort of made this comment about how they accepted that on Dairy Week, maybe they'd let the judges down as a collective group and all wanted to do better, which I think they probably did. So signature challenge, four individual highly decorative custard pies. They were told that the pie should be open-topped. Custard should set during baking. They were given 2.5 hours. And Paul had warned them that he wanted that short crust to be like a melt in the mouth, not to overwork it, to bring it together, chill it down. He wanted to see it beautifully formed, and he wanted, of course, the theme there of the 1920s. Well, Jane, kick us off. This is a nice challenge, custard pie. It seems a very sort of classic challenge to be set. What did you make of this one?
Oh, I thought it was lovely. I really like this challenge. In fact, last week, was it? I made a custard pie. But I just want to go back to David's comment about last week we let the judges down.
Yeah.
I actually think they were let down with the challenges they were given. I don't think they should beat themselves up too much about that. I think there was 6 of 1 half dozen of the other there, to be perfectly honest. Yes, I love this challenge. I do love a good custard pie, tart, whatever you want to call it. When is a tart a pie and a pie a tart? I don't know. But I have got a gripe. I've got a Jane's hump at this stage.
What was that, Jane?
It's you chill your pastry down, wrap it in cling film and put it in the fridge. I think in this day and age where we're all really focused on not using single-use plastics, they should not be encouraging the bakers to wrap it in plastic and put it in the fridge. They could have put it in a little plastic reusable pot. They could have... I very often put mine in a bowl with a plate over the top. You're just trying to stop the air getting at it so it goes crusty. I think that we should all be responsible for encouraging people not to use the single-use plastic. So that was I've got it written on my notes, cling film, ! It's really tough to do without cling film. I haven't even been through a roll this year. I've still got the one I started at the beginning of the year because I think we all need to make an effort. So okay. Please, 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 everybody, try not to use too much cling film. But going back to the actual challenge... Oh, fabulous challenge. So many lovely flavours. I adore custard. It's one of the things I really like. Any custard-based desserts, I love creme caramels. I love these sorts of tarts. Really nice challenge. And I think they all, with the odd exception, they all did an absolutely brilliant job with flavours and the way they looked, not convinced they all look 1920s. David particularly stood out for me, beautiful with those biscuits, but all created some really stunning looking tarts.
Absolutely, and we'll talk about some of them specifically. Just how generally, talking about short crust pastry, they were sort of given the advice that once it was chilled, it could be rolled out ready for blind baking, but not to go too thin, because that's when you can have the risk of breakage. So is that the major problem that you can have with short crust pastry? What should we be looking for as amateur bakers?
Yeah, I think so. And I think because you're going to be blind baking, obviously you're going to be crisping that up when you bake it. And I think there was a worry as well that once you've put the custard in, if it's baked again, then again you could end up with the pastry being overbaked, really.
Yeah, and again, if there's not enough time in the oven, then you know, the worry that it was going to be raw too much time, and then the custard would overbake. And just, Jane, talk to us about making a good custard. They were very clear on the narration, how it should be made up of egg yolk, sugar, cream, and vanilla. How hard is it to make a nice custard?
I think it's fairly straightforward. What you want to do is make sure you haven't got any bits in it. So I would want to strain my custard before I put it into my cases, unless, of course, you're flavouring it with orange, or any something that has little bits in which case you're a bit stuck with that one. I would have, just going back to the pastry, I would have liked to have seen them sealing that pastry, because we didn't have any talk about soggy bottoms, really. And if you're putting a very wet custard, which obviously it is, it's runny, it's uncooked, into a pastry case, you do risk getting a very soggy bottom. And I don't recall seeing any of them seal that pastry once it had been blind baked. So the way I would do it, and I don't know whether about you, Howard, is I'd blind bake it, and then I would coat it with some beaten egg, just pop it back in the oven for a couple of minutes to cook, which sort of forms an egg seal and stop that custard going through. And you know, it shouldn't all overbake that custard, the pastry, when you're baking it a second time, because actually you're cooking that custard at a reasonably low temperature. You shouldn't be, burning the pastry shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, I mean, Howard, there were so many interesting flavours that were brought up. I particularly like Steph's sort of zesty citrus custard pies. Rosie with these elderflower jellies was probably the most impressive in terms of what she was trying to do.
As I was saying earlier about, you don't often think about 1920s as being a kind of highlight of baking, but if you do do a bit of an online search for 1920s bakes or 1920s desserts, you come up with images of kind of domed jellies and things like that. So I could see what she was going for. And I think Henry as well had got some jellies on his bake, hadn't he? So I think they were both going for something that had that kind of 1920s feel to it. But it's tricky, isn't it? And I think particularly trying to put it onto a custard pie. This is so difficult, isn't it? Saying custard pie when you want to say custard tart. You could see Prue at certain points wanting to say custard tart, but the whole idea was that the thing that gave it the 1920s edge was calling it a custard pie.
There was that moment of exasperation when Rosie dropped it, and the cameraman just didn't know where to go. There was obviously one cameraman. He knows his job is to capture this moment, and he doesn't know whether he should be focusing on what's just gone on the floor or on Rosie's face. And I thought, I really enjoyed how, because usually in an edit it would look quite smooth, but this was just like clearly the one camera, they only had one good shot of it, and they just showed the floor to Rosie's face to back to the floor. And it was it just always seems to happen to someone, doesn't it, Jane? You can't have 10 weeks of Bake Off this doesn't happen once or twice.
No, something always hits the floor. Oh, my heart went out to her. It really did. And you could see it happening, couldn't you? It was sort of those wonderful metal cake things that are supposed to help you are actually a bit slippy, and this poor warm tart just went flying. She took it very well. She really did. I thought she was going to cry, but She took it very, very
well. Absolutely. There's maybe a couple of the personalities we've seen this year that maybe wouldn't have dealt with that moment as well as she did. But there was almost the comedy of Michael, who was just obviously so intent on what he was doing. Just continued piping, didn't even bother to turn around and just go, everything okay? And you could just see behind the total chaos that's going on with poor Rosie.
But Rosie's face, when she just let out that, that little plaintive cry, and you could see the sort of it every emotion of the tent, really, that kind of despair and disbelief and all of the things, and you think, what can I do? It was heartbreaking.
Is there something that, if that happens to you, you know, when you're doing the signature, do you still think, okay, I've got time to turn this around? Whereas that maybe happens in the showstopper and you're already nervous about how things are going. There's something maybe about it being the first of your three and you've got time to turn it around, or would you not be thinking about that?
I think the trouble is that you're thinking in your mind, they've asked for four pies, four tarts, and one of yours is now on the floor. And it's like, am I just going to be completely thrown out because I can only deliver three?
Yeah.
Will they understand? All of those kind of emotions and those rationalisation going through your head, I think.
I think the judges are kind. At Christmas, we had to make these funny snowflake, I can't remember where they came from, Iceland or something, things. And as I was carrying mine to the table, one fell off and hit the floor. And the judges are kind. They know you've made it. It's not as though she hadn't made her tart. It's not as though it wasn't baked or something like that. I don't think she would have got marked down for that. You know, it's not like, who was it? 1 week, somebody had only done 11 or...
Helena, wasn't it?
And there was this just sort of little outline, rather like a crime scene.
Well, I wanted to talk about Priya, because it's not... There were those who were watching last week who maybe felt she was fortunate to stay in, and she's obviously faced a lot of issues with timing. But Priya, you know, she tried to make two custards, you know, probably twice as much work. And yet again, she effectively ran out of time. And you sort of wonder, why are you not learning from lessons of previous weeks? Or is it, again, just the fear of making a mistake, feeling like you've got to prove yourself, and she's tried too much again, Howard, maybe?
I think also, as we were saying earlier, if she's committed herself within that recipe to do two types of custard, it's a bit late then to be sort of changing midway. And so I think that it's getting that balance between continuing to do the recipe that you've submitted and at the same time being realistic about what you can actually achieve. And if she's practiced it at home and it's probably worked, you know, you sort of go in there with a little bit of optimism that you can turn it around within the time. And unfortunately, sometimes within the tent, time is just completely abstract.
Yes, because when you practice at home, you haven't got somebody sticking a camera in your face and coming and chatting to you. So you might be tight for time at home, but get it done. But once you've got camera crews and the judges wandering around, it just eats up another, say, maybe 10 precious minutes.
Okay, it would be remiss not to mention the handshake, of course, to David. You know, Paul effectively told him he'd made a perfect pie. He sort of nailed this one, Jane, really.
Oh, completely nailed it. I just absolutely loved his, I'm going to call it a tart, because it wasn't a pie, it was a tart. But certainly with the girls on top, I think Neil and Noel called them very flirty. I thought he did a stunning job, and all credit to him. He didn't go for any fancy flavours. He went for a standard, gorgeous vanilla custard. Beautiful biscuits. How he did that in the time, I have no idea. They looked amazing. He was worried about them cooking and kept saying, they're not baked. But unlike, I suspect, what Priya did, crank the heat up a bit, which is why hers boiled, he went with it and they were just set and just perfect. Oh, I loved them. I thought he did a stunning job.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Anyone else there, Howard, that you thought got fair feedback or a bit unlucky with the feedback they received for the signature?
I struggled with Helena's understanding how it related to the 1920s. I must admit, it looked great. I thought it looked great, but I did think This is one where it's actually got a bit of a foamy look on top. And if you think about the kind of custard pies that are used within kind of slapstick comedy, they do, certainly in later years, they used to use shaving foam or something like that. So I think it had got some of a kind of slapstick look to it. I just couldn't see how this related to the 1920s.
Yeah, this was a mythical sea creature that in the feedback she was told was, you know, had too much lavender and was a bit soapy. It's probably not the most ideal feedback.
No.
They said not bad, but not brilliant. For me, I don't really like lavender in my food. So I probably wouldn't have liked it very much. But I thought it was ingenious. And I can't see how it related to the 1920s either. But to be fair, I can't see how quite a lot of them related to the 1920s.
There's some tenuous links that were being offered.
There were some tenuous links. It was interesting, Sandy said that Helena is not the only one who is drawing inspiration from 1920s pop culture and then went on to talk about Henry and his Kool-Aid, as in pop. But I thought, were mythical sea creatures some unknown element of 1920s pop culture?
I have no idea.
I'm not sure. We'll do email us.
We need to look up the Kraken. Maybe he looked quite Kraken-like, didn't
he? If you've got anything to contribute, as listeners, please do email us. It's thebakedown@baitwithalegend.com, or you can tweet us, as many of you have been doing, at baitwithalegend, and we will endeavour to read as many out as we can. Just before we get on to the technical challenge, we've had an email here from Jonelle Vickery, who is one of our American listeners. She wants to know from both of you, what week would you introduce to Bake Off if you could introduce a new week that hasn't been done in the past? She proposed an American comfort food week, and she said she'd like to see a week where the signature was to make your best chocolate chip cookie, a technical of apple pie, where she would like to give further instruction here. Directions would be make the crust, make the fruit filling, and top with lattice work, and serve with vanilla ice cream. And she'd like a showstopper of a shepherd's pie. So any thoughts on that, Jane, if you'd like an American comfort food week? Or what week would you like to see? Because, you know, you weren't wild last week about the dairy week. Is there a week you think we haven't done before that there's a gap in the market?
An American comfort food week, I think, is a nice idea. I wouldn't necessarily choose those challenges. I think they're probably a little bit simplistic, maybe, although a good apple pie, it's hard to be beaten. I don't think we need lots and lots of new ones. I think there's no harm in revisiting some of the previous challenges. You know, I think that they're in danger of having to find something new every year. There's nothing wrong with a pastry week, is there? Because there are so many different types of pastries. Mm. Why not choose, if you're going to do that, choose them from around the world? So let's have a Norwegian week.
We had Danish week, didn't we, last year? So yeah, absolutely.
You know, there's some wonderful bakes. I mean, my sister-in-law is Norwegian, and my brother lives in Norway and has done for 40 years, and they make some wonderful cakes over there. They do something called World's Best.
Well, so yeah, because I think 2 years ago, Howard, we had Italian. Last year there was Danish. So maybe, do you like the idea of going around the world almost looking for
inspiration? I do, and I think it's an opportunity to get a bit more kind of bread back in as well. I know we have Bread Week, but it does seem that it would be nice to get another bready bake in somewhere, you know, so it's not just restricting it to 1 week. We get quite a lot of cake, but I'd like to see bread coming back a bit.
This week's episode of The Baked Down is in association with our friends at Seed and Bean Chocolate. Seed and Bean truly live on the wilder side of taste, creating adventurous, botanically inspired flavours using only 100% organic ingredients. If you head to their website at seedandbean.co.uk, you'll receive 25% off your purchase using the code THEBAKEDOWN when you check out. So let's talk about the technical challenge, and I hope my pronunciation is right here, Howard. You can correct me, but beignet soufflés, they're asked to make 18 and told they should be uniform in size and shape and serve with sabayon. The instruction was to get the fried shoe ball filled with smooth raspberry jam, crispy on the outside, light and fluffy on the inside. Howard, have you made beignet souffle in the past?
No, I haven't. Although I've certainly done my fair share of choux pastry. So it was a bit shocking that one or two people seemed not to have made choux pastry before. They were struggling a little bit, I thought. So I think it's about sometimes having, even if it's a technical challenge that you have not actually made that particular thing before, having some of the basic skills to be able to do your pastry and perhaps cook it in a different way. I know we had one, I think I might have mentioned it before, where we did floating islands, eel flotton, and I'd never actually poached meringue before, but I'd made meringue before. So I think it's a similar thing to that, having the basic skills and then cooking it in a different way.
Well, Jane, this was interesting because Paul, in his sort of small commentary, I guess, after they'd set the challenge, which they were given 90 minutes to do, said that while he's expect many of them have obviously made choux before, that most probably haven't fried it. And that was a challenge. And to get it as round as he hoped, because he was talking about how maybe sort of using spoons, I think, and there seemed to be some different tactics done by the various bakers as how to go about it.
I'm like Howard. I think what let several of them down is they've not made choux before, which quite surprised me, actually. And then poor Michael, who I love, when he made it again, he said, I'm still runny. I don't know what to do. What's gone wrong? You put too much egg in. I mean, it's as simple as that. And if you'd had the experience, you would have beaten your egg and added it bit by bit until it was the right consistency. And I just felt there was a little bit of skill lacking in this one. I loved this challenge, though. I think fried choux balls, I can't wait to make them. If people have made donuts and fried donuts, which possibly most of the bakers will or should have made in their journey towards being a bake-off contestant, they would have had the frying experience. If they'd made choux, they would have had the choux experience. Making it into a ball, I wanted to say to Michael, okay, you can't get it on a spoon, just pipe it directly into that fat. You may rescue it that way. I thought it was a really nice challenge that should have just tested their basic skills. I did look them up afterwards. I've got them in an old Cordon Bleu book that I'd rescued from my mother's kitchen. And in that, they don't put the jam in. They use a jam dipping sauce and not a sabayon. But I thought it was a lovely challenge that they should, I think, have
done better.
Done a little bit better, I think.
What struck me, Howard, watching this one, was sometimes there isn't necessarily the correlation between how it looks like they're doing and then how the feedback goes. But on this one, it totally was. The two that seemed to be struggling biggest time with this was David and Michael. And so it proved they came ninth and eighth, respectively.
It seemed to me as though nobody had really done these before. And I think that's true of a lot of technical challenges. So I used to find the technical challenges quite reassuring in a way, because you think more or less everybody should be in the same boat. And so I think... You know, I didn't get too worried about the technical challenges because there's nothing really you can do about it.
No, there isn't. You can't forethink them. They come up with some fiendish things. Dampf noodle, I still think of.
But between the two of them, we probably saw almost contrasting ways of how to deal with exasperation. We had David, who sort of smiled his way through it and seemed to accept he couldn't quite get on with it. And yet Michael sort of ended up with this quite unusual scene from Bake Off with Noel almost having to give him the pep talk and sort of keep him fighting. Obviously you didn't have, Noel back in your day, but would that be something that Sue or Mel, that they would go around and try and give some of the bakers pep talks if they felt they needed it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think you do need it from time to time. I think sometimes it can be to do with individual personalities. So maybe David is just the kind of person who just deals with things very well, you know, whatever life throws at him. But let's not forget as well that he had done particularly well in the signature challenge. So he probably didn't feel under the same kind of pressure to do as well in the technical.
Yeah. It was described by by Sandy as something the dog had done.
Yeah, it wasn't kind.
And she repeated it. She said it twice. Thought it was hilarious, and he laughed all the way through that.
Yeah, yes.
Well, maybe also with David, he had done quite well in many of the technicals. Just, you know, and overall, he's had quite a good journey, as that word on Bake Off. He's had quite a good journey so far and done well on technical, so maybe he's just gone, do you know what, it was my turn to not have a strong week in technical, and so be it. But in terms of those who did do particularly well, Priya, you know, she was told that all of hers were, you know, fairly round and light and a, you know, a pretty good filling. The structure was there and the taste good. Just, I think what let her down, it seemed to be, was her sabayon was not quite right. And it was Helena who won the technical with a good colour, good aeration. Not too much jam. I think Prue said it was delicious. So overall, Helena probably looked like she edged it, Jane.
Oh, she definitely edged it. And I think they all had trouble with their sabayon. And I probably would have a problem. I've never made a sabayon, to be honest. And I did look it up. And Cordon Bleu say you can make a cold sabayon and a hot sabayon, one you make a syrup with, one you blah, blah, blah. I haven't made one. I'm going to now, though. And I think that is something that I would advise anybody going into Bake Off, look back at old things, old episodes, find some of the challenges that you've never made before and do it. Yeah. You know, like shoe pastry, always make sure you can do shoe and things like that. So look back, because they do repeat some of these, not exact challenges, but some of these techniques, and it's always worth looking back. But no, Helena had a very, very good technical. I was delighted for her and Priya too. I thought they all sailed through it very calmly. I mean, the one thing that got me though, Alice, I love you, always smile through everything. An absolute no-no is shoe, is you do not add flour after you've put your eggs in, because it's uncooked flour, and she was trying to thicken it up. So again, another you're lacking in experience on the shoe. So get out there and practice your shoe, future bake-off bakers.
Okay, so Howard, I can assume by the time we sit down and do our next podcast, you would have been trying out how to make your beignet souffle. Would you be going back to Sheffield and getting those done tonight?
Maybe not tonight, but I would like to have a go at them, yes. I have made a sabayon before, or zabaglione, or however you pronounce it, which I think is more or less the same thing. But I've never done anything to kind of dip into it, so that sounds quite nice.
Okay. Jane, do you have a fryer at home that you would sometimes use for your baking? Do you do much frying?
I don't do a lot of deep fat frying, because I find that I have got a fryer. I've got an electron, just like the bakers had one of those. And they are brilliant because they're thermostatically controlled. So very good. But I find that once the oil is heated up, it kind of leaves this sort of chip shop smell around the house. I have got an outside electric point in the garden, and I think my husband says I ought to be doing my frying outside, so I don't use it very often.
Well, let's move on to the showstopper. The challenge was to make a Prohibition era cake, a 1920s two-tiered cake. The flavour should be based on their favourite cocktail, they were told, and to be a spectacle of the era. And they were given 4 hours to do this, and Paul was very clear that he would allow them, or would expect that they would have at least an hour left for the decoration. Prue wanted to see wonderful design, a delicious cake, and a taste of a recognisable cocktail. So Howard, I assume this was something that appealed to you, as we've discussed, you know, and a chance to put the alcohol in the cake, although we should mention obviously Priya decided not to, and I wasn't sure if that was maybe for religious reasons, or maybe she doesn't drink, but she obviously went for a mocktail approach. But just generally, this was all quite fun, and there were some really impressive creations, Howard.
Yeah, and again, what a wonderful opportunity to do something that has that kind of Art Deco feel, that kind of 1920s look to it. So I thought it was a great challenge. I would have loved to have had a go at this.
So, Jane, who leapt out to you? There was all sorts of different. I mean, obviously, we've mentioned about how some people seemingly have looked at, or not looked at others, but have ended up making quite similar cakes. And here, Pina Colada. I mean, whoever's doing the PR for Pina Colada, I mean, they're doing fantastically well. There was Pina Colada all over the place. What was it, Steph, Alice? Were there some others?
There were four altogether. So yeah, Steph, four. Alice, Michelle, and Priya. Although yeah, Priya's all was without the alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. Would you have reached for the Pina Colada?
Well, would I? I'm not sure. I do love and have just recently made a pineapple and coconut cake. So maybe. The risk is with coconut in a cake, it either gets in stuck in your teeth or it can be a bit dry. You have to be very, very careful with a coconut cake, otherwise you get the dryness. And I think Paul mentioned that at one point and said, actually, less coconut in the cake. Whose was that? Was that Michelle's, wasn't it? She had coconut shavings in there. What I tend to do is I tend to blitz my coconut so it's much smaller pieces and make sure there's plenty of liquid in there to counteract it. And she put shavings in, which gets stuck in your teeth. I put shavings on one of mine in my, well, I can't remember, lime, meringue and coconut week in the tent. And they complained about that then, about getting in the teeth. But, I just thought they were stunning. All of them were stunning. What wonderful creations in 4 hours to produce those cakes. I don't think there was a failure amongst them all. Looking back at them, and I just think they're all stunning. I don't know what to say. Usually you get a couple that are a disaster. And, you know, I thought they were very unkind about Michelle's. I thought she'd gone for the new, it's very fancy doing these geode cakes these days. And she'd nicely plattened the bottom one with a pineapple pattern on it. I don't think hers was any messier or... You know, I wasn't mad about the way David's looked. It looked a bit wonky and it looked a bit messy to me, David's. I mean, beautiful, but a little bit messy. And I thought Michelle got a really hard ride over
there. Well, Michelle did say that she felt like she was being told off. And David sort of had this moment of honesty when he was, you know, it was queried whether they were supposed to be sinking in, and he sort of came clean. How would you think you'd have been tempted to say, absolutely, that is what I was going for. I was going for that slightly synced look.
No, I don't think I could have. I don't think I could have convinced anybody about that. So, yeah, I think David was right, to be honest. Yeah,
Henry, as if we needed to be told by him where he shops. When he, I love this moment where he said, "I get the strongest coffee that I could find in Waitrose." Of course, he shops in Waitrose. Of course, he does. I would be gutted, and I cannot wait for the commercial deal to be done where Henry is the face of Waitrose in a year's time or whatever it may be.
It'll happen.
And you're right, Jane. You mentioned earlier that there was a beep from Henry, so he did swear in this week's episode, which is not what you'd expect. But you know, when Steph was helping him out, he also referred to her having a place in heaven. he couldn't do more for this kind of altar boy description that we all imagine of him. So fantastic of him. But he got some pretty good feedback that it looked very dramatic, very 1920s, and Prue thought it was a lovely flavour, possibly a little bit dry. Let's just talk a bit maybe about Helena's. I mean, that the colour of this sponge red velvet. What did you make of that, Howard? It was something to remember.
Do you know, I loved that, actually. I thought it was, again, I thought it was a really, really interesting take on the 1920s, because thinking back to kind of silent movies, and there were lots of women within the silent movies who were called vamps. So this whole idea of having kind of vampire-looking characters. So I thought it was great to have that kind of vampire look. I thought she did really well.
Some of the feedback, I mean, Paul took issue with her piping work. So it was a bit bland inside, a bit dry. You've got the vodka taste, but not the raspberry. I mean, it could have been kinder feedback, possibly.
I think it could. And Jane and I were talking earlier again about she was criticised for the quality of her piping. And actually, I don't think it was that bad. I don't think, you know, it's strange sometimes when the judges say, oh, this is beautifully piped and this one's really not very nicely piped at all. And you look at it and you begin to kind of doubt your own eyesight, really.
I agree. I'm not knocking either of them, because I thought Helen did a really good job, especially in the time you're trying to... You're trying to get a two-tier cake done in 4 hours. Anyway, but so we'd seen Michael's, which I thought was delightful, beautiful colours, but the piping wasn't in any way sort of outstanding, but the overall look of the cake was stunning. And then up came Helena's with very similar standard of piping, and she gets sort of slated for it. And I thought she got a really tough time of it. I don't know whether... Paul, you do see him raise his eyebrows a few times every time she mentions something sort of gothy or Halloween-y or ghosty or vampire-ish. And maybe he's just got fed up with her. And I thought, I think she got a rough deal this time. I really did.
Some of the feedback Alice got was also referring to that hers looked a bit of a mess and some of the sort of drawing could have been better. There were big pieces of pineapple.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know why, you know, Helena
got... And then they got the rough end of it.
I don't know why at all. I'm a bit of a loss of this one.
Well, it's a time in the show for Howard's hump. Howard, I hope I'm not putting too much pressure on you to find something to hump about every single episode. But what have you got for us this week? What do you take issue with?
I think this week it was a comment that Paul made. So Helena said she was doing this. This was in the signature book. She was doing an ancient Greek sea creature. And Paul chipped in and said, like a gorgon. Now, a gorgon is not an ancient Greek sea creature, as far as I know. It's a sort of creature with snakes coming out of its head. But the judges sometimes say kind of inaccurate things, which they say with such conviction that it kind of takes you back. You're a bit thrown off guard. And Paul, I find in particular, has to look as if he's all-knowing. So I suppose my hump is that I'm a bit annoyed by that, really. And a credit to all bakers who actually deal with it, because you do get thrown and you do think, should I challenge or should I just let him look as if he knows what he's talking about, even when he doesn't?
Well, thank goodness that you're there to put the world right, Howard. Actually, I hadn't even spotted that it was Gorgon, because, of course, Gorgon is Medusa, the Gorgon with the snakes, and perhaps he just got his Gorgons and Krakens muddled up.
But I think the fact that they left that in, either the producers are wanting to show that Paul perhaps doesn't always get it right, or maybe they didn't know either.
So we better move on to Judge Jane, although Howard is here to give his opinion as well. Star baker, in the end, it was seemed to be between Steph and Henry, and Steph got the nod, Jane.
Steph did, and actually I don't think we've mentioned Steph, I don't think, in the whole of this podcast so far. It's just so much to talk about. She is a lovely baker, isn't she? I have to say, she really deserved it. She seems to be so self-effacing and so surprised when anybody congratulates her. I think she's an absolute delight. She did really well in all three challenges. Yeah, I think really, for me, she pipped Henry to the post. And you know, I like Henry. I think the beautiful thing about Steph, apart from her what appears to be gorgeous personality, is she does stunning bakes, but she doesn't really, really overcomplicate it. And I think there's always the danger of overcomplicating it and then getting confused flavours or getting, you know, in a bit of a muddle. I thought this was stunning, especially in her showstopper. Really beautiful with these, which I don't think they really particularly mention, but these lovely coloured chocolate shards coming up the outside. Good old Steph. I think she deserved it. What, for the second week running?
Exactly, for the second week running. So putting her in great stead for the rest of the competition. Mm. And of course, for weeks, since week one, we've been told that two people could leave at any time. And finally, 5 weeks in, it was time, wasn't it, Jane? And in the end, it was Michelle and Helena. But I wonder if you agree with this.
Well, the trouble is, in disagreeing, it means I'm going to turn around and say I think somebody else should have gone. So I'm not in any way going to say somebody else should have gone, although there possibly were a couple of people who didn't do quite as well as they would have liked. Michelle didn't have her best week, probably, and Helena, I don't think Helena should have gone. I think she did a pretty good job all round and head in the top of the technical. She didn't do that badly in the signature or the showstopper. So don't know who I would have put in her place, but I don't think she should have gone.
Well, you said this earlier, Jane, didn't you, that you felt Helena, maybe some of the feedback was a bit stronger than it could have been. Howard, were you in agreement there? I mean, Helena possibly unfortunate to leave, because we speak about how once you're in the show, you're not aware if you've nearly left at any point until. But Helena hasn't been spoken about at any week of being nearly out of the programme, and to sort of go seemingly having got to the stage again, you know, suddenly just, you know, gone. A bit unlucky, possibly.
I think so. I think, you know, she's obviously approached Bake Off and the challenges with her own style. And I think in most weeks it's been really, really refreshing to see that. So I'm not only sad to see her go as an individual baker, but I do think this week in particular, it was unfair.
And of course, Michelle, who had been star baker all the way up back in week one, Jane, she also departs, which is a shame, really. She's been a great, great personality on the show.
It's really hard to lose anybody, I think, in any week, especially as you get to know the bakers more. By week five, you do have some idea of what they're like. Yeah, she just didn't have a great week, did she, really? Her blueberry tarts, which I thought were really, really pretty. They said it hadn't got much... Blueberry didn't have much taste. Well, blueberries don't have much taste. And the brulee hadn't worked. But, you know, other people's stuff hadn't worked. Seventh in the technical. And I don't know. I disagree with the comments about her cake. I liked the geode cake. I didn't think it was too confusing. I thought it was... If you look on Instagram, you'll see plenty of cakes looking like that. So who would have gone instead of them? I don't know, but I was sad to see both of them go.
Okay, well, yeah, as you say, never nice to see people leave and suddenly two good really characters and personalities out of the programme. Mm. But look, thank you so much for being part of the podcast once again today, Jane and Howard. To all of you listening, please do continue to tell your friends about the podcast. You can find us on all podcast providers. If you want to get in touch with the show at any point, it is thebakedown@bakewithalegend.com. You can tweet us @bakewithalegend. Also, you should head to Twitter on the morning of every Tuesday when the programme goes out here in the UK. I'm aware a lot of you are listening over in America. You can enter as well. We're doing a competition every Tuesday on Twitter. We're asking you to comment with who you think that night's star baker will be and who is going to leave the tent. So if you get both of them right, we are giving you a voucher, at least entering the competition, if more than one of you gets it right. And congratulations to Lottie Freeman, who got that right last week. She said Steph was going to be star baker and Phil to leave. So we look forward to seeing Lottie at one of our upcoming classes. And if you do want to check what classes are coming up, please head to bakewithalegend.com and you can check out all the classes that we've got coming up. Howard, thank you so much. I can't wait to taste your beignet souffle that you're going to be bringing in to see us next week. And thank you so much, Jane.
No, it's been a pleasure.
You just heard a Stripped Media production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.